This is the Hockey News Podcast.
It's the Hockey News Podcast, everybody. Matt Larkin here with Ryan Kennedy and Ken Campbell, here to talk some playoffs. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm having a lot of fun with the playoffs this year. We got, you know, games going late into overtime. I find myself, my heart's beating fast. I'm staying up into the wee hours of the night. I feel like a little kid again. And is it just me, or have the playoffs been really good so far?
I think they've been really, really entertaining this year. After a couple of years where they were kind of meh. You know, last year, I mean, Pittsburgh was a great story and everything, but there just wasn't a lot of compelling stuff. This year feels to me like it's one of those years where all kinds of crazy shit's going to happen, and somebody who we didn't think was going to win the cup is going to win it. And, I mean, last night, to me, was the most entertaining night of playoff hockey I've seen in a long, long time. Four games go into overtime. But, I mean, that's neither here nor there. Lots of bad games go into overtime, too. But all four games, a team was trailing by two or more goals and came back to force it to overtime. Three of those teams won. One of them didn't. And that, to me, you know, you just don't see that in the playoffs anymore. Like referees are calling penalties.
Yeah.
Referees are calling penalties.
And what is this, 2005?
Calgary, Anaheim had five power plays last night, and Calgary had none. When was the last time you ever saw that in the playoffs?
And overtime power
exactly.
plays. That's an oxymoron.
They're
overtime power play.
They're calling penalties. Goalies are not stopping everything. Last night, the collective save percentage of all the goalies that played was .888. Like,
woo!
Like, we're seeing shit now that we usually don't see in the playoffs. Referees calling penalties. Goalie's not stopping everything, and really, really, like, outstanding play by some just great players. I think this year's playoffs, I mean, the first round is always the best round, and I hope that it continues, but this year, it's even by those standards, it's been off the charts so far.
Yeah, and what's kind of fun, too, is the unpredictability, not only early on in the playoffs, but all season long, if you think about it, like, we thought Tampa Bay would be a Stanley Cup contender. Well, they missed the dance altogether. We thought Dallas might be a powerhouse. Nope, they missed the playoffs altogether.
Yeah.
Chicago, Stanley Cup favorite. They're in trouble. Washington, Stanley Cup favorite. They're in trouble. Like, Pittsburgh humming along.
Yeah.
That's an obvious one.
Kind of saw, but I don't think anybody thought they'd be up 3-0 on Columbus at this point.
Yeah, especially with all the injuries that Pittsburgh has on their blue line. So it's at least like
Coke.
The Penguins are doing it in, like, a new fun way where it's, like, it's almost like they have one arm tied behind their back. You know, it's like, let's see you win it without Chris Letang. It's like, okay, we can do
it's
that,
the Jake
too.
Guentzel show.
Exactly.
How about that little guy?
He's second in playoff scoring right now.
Yeah, that's right, behind Sid. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Hockey sense, man.
That's
right. Hockey sense and a shot, you can do it.
So we've got a large number of teams on the ropes down 0-3. We've got four different teams. We've got Columbus, Calgary, Minnesota, and Chicago. You know, it hasn't happened often, but it has happened several times in NHL history, coming back from 0-3. Do you see it happening? Do you think it's possible that any of these teams can pull off the unthinkable? And if you do have a pick of which team does it, who would it be?
Well, I don't think any of these teams is coming back. I mean, history will tell us that. I mean, how many series have gone 3-0 and how many times has it happened? It's happening with more frequency now than it's happened in the past. But, you know, I mean, I look at a team like Chicago, like, they had to win last night, and they had, even if they had won in overtime, they had to win big. They had them 2-0, you know, they had to win big. Calgary had them 4-1 on home ice, and they had their foot on their necks in that game, and they couldn't do it. Those are just games that are just going to completely deflate you, and I don't know how you come back from that. I guess if there's one team for me that might have a chance, it would be Minnesota. Just because, as we've talked about, I mean, they're the best possession team in the playoffs right now. They just can't beat the goalie. They just can't beat Jake Allen. And if they do find a way to just pierce that armor somehow, just to get a shitty goal, like a bad goal early in the game, chase him maybe from a game if you can, like get three or four on him within the space of 22 minutes, which has happened to this guy before. You know, I mean, then maybe you have a chance. But they're really the only team I can see that might do this. And I don't think they're going to.
I still have a little bit of fear of the Blackhawks if I'm Nashville, based on more psychological reasons,
yeah, yeah.
which is it's the Chicago Blackhawks. They've seen everything. They've done everything.
Yeah.
They have overcome. Whereas Nashville, they've never beaten Chicago in the playoffs. I always think back. I believe it was the year Chicago won its first cup in
2010.
This modern. Martin Jurat had a open, like, it was an empty net situation.
Yeah.
He missed it. Chicago came back. If Nashville had won that game, it would have been a commanding lead in the series. They probably would have won it in six games. They did not step on the neck. Chicago came back, beat them. I feel like that little seed of doubt.
Thank
you guys for doing it. Yeah. I'm sure that worked out perfectly. It's just that little seed of doubt where if you're Nashville, you want to chop the head off that monster in game four. Because if there's even a little bit of light,
you're still looking
at Taves, Kane, Keith, Seabrook, Hossa, Crawford.
You get it 3-1, and then you're going back to Chicago for 3-2. So
yeah.
It changes the complexion of things. I just thought that last night they faced that test,
mm-hmm.
and they passed.
Yeah,
like they didn't get rattled at all. Like
yeah.
even a little bit when they were down, 2-0. You know,
yeah.
I mean they fought back. They were good, and they just didn't. And they were the better team last night. They were the better team, like, I think, by in the second half of the game, by a considerable margin, and the overtime, they were the better team by far.
Yeah, and, like, to Nashville's credit, this is a team built to hang with the Blackhawks. In terms of mobility, in terms of their personnel, they can hang with them, and clearly Pekka Rinne has been the better goalie in the series, so they get an advantage there.
Yeah.
I still think Nashville's going to win. I'm just saying, if you were going to be scared, be scared of Chicago. Yeah.
And I think the natural reaction is to compare it to the LA Kings in 2014 because they had that championship pedigree. They went down 0-3 to San Jose. They came back and won that series. And I think they did it on the sheer sort of fear factor of, oh my God, it's the Kings, they're creeping back.
Mm.
But the difference is that series, the peripheral numbers going into the playoffs supported LA. They're a great possession team. The other Chicago teams that won were good possession teams.
Yeah.
But this year, we said going in, there was a possible chink in the armor. The peripherals did not suggest Chicago was a dominant team. And I think we're seeing that now. So I'm with you, Kenny Boy. I think Minnesota is still a team to watch. It's not like the Blues are lighting up Devan Dubnyk. I thought offense was going to be a problem for St. Louis going into the playoffs. They don't have as much scoring depth as they used to have. These games have been very close, 2-1, 3-1, empty net goal that made it 3-1. So really, it's 3-2-1 games.
Yeah, yeah.
And with a couple little bounces, I think Minnesota still has the deeper team. And it feels like the series is over, but I don't think it is. Just based on how close all those games have been, I think Minnesota would be the team I put my chips on.
I will say I feel like Minnesota's toast. I feel like this is a team that peaked way too early in the regular season. I don't see them having the reserve necessary because St. Louis is kind of playing with house money in the sense that they can play a lot looser. They're up 3-0. They've got a couple of chances for outs. They have a very skilled team. Let's not also forget, they got a free player when Vladimir Sobotka came back. He's already got 2 points in
and
the
series.
And
he's a good player.
And he's a good two-way player.
Yeah.
So they got a free player. And
that's like a massive trade deadline acquisition.
Yeah, like it's like Martin Hansel, but didn't cost a first round pick.
Yeah, exactly.
And he can score.
Yeah,
yeah, and and I think, you know, they clearly have not missed Kevin Shattenkirk. Maybe Washington wants to trade Kevin Shattenkirk back at this point. I don't know. But
I don't know why
you wouldn't. Toss in Colton Parayko and let him do his thing, and you're all good.
Interesting. So switching gears to Calgary, because I think I agree, Ken, about Calgary being in trouble. And one thing that really troubled me is you don't want to hear your goaltender after a game really just crapping on himself. It's not a great omen for the series. We saw Brian Elliott do that, sort of calling out his own play in post-game interviews, which, hey, good for him for being so honest, but it's not a great omen. So do you guys think if you're the Flames, I mean, it's a two-part question, but one is, do you consider going to Chad Johnson for Game 4? And do you think either of those goaltenders will be Calgary's starter next year? Because both guys are UFAs.
Yes and no. I think, absolutely you go to Chad Johnson. You know, particularly with Brian Elliott basically throwing himself, you know, to the curb on that. And just not playing well. And just like, I mean, last night they would have won if they had gotten even good goaltending.
Mm-hmm.
They would have won that game and they'd be back in the series. They wouldn't win this series. I don't think they were ever going to win this series. But, I mean, it's a desperation move to go to Chad Johnson, but they're desperate. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, it doesn't get more desperate than 3-0.
And I mean, Chad Johnson was good this year. He was really good for them. He saved their season in a lot of ways.
He
so maybe you call on him to try and save your season again. I don't know. Yeah, so I think you have to go to Chad Johnson, and I can't imagine that you can. Can you come back with Brian Elliott next year in Calgary? No. Maybe Chad Johnson's still there as the backup. Maybe Ben Bishop is the guy they go after. And mm-hmm.
They did go after him. They were close to getting him last year, right?
Yeah. Maybe that's the guy you end up with or something. But that, you know, I mean, it's pretty obvious that Brian Elliott's not like he had some really rough patches during the season too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with that. I think the only thing you could do is you give Brian Elliott game four and say, like, you guys in this mess, you guys out of it. Knowing that you're probably losing anyways, but you give him that one last chance and then you say, see you later via unrestricted free agency. I like the idea of keeping Chad Johnson and going for a big fish like a Ben Bishop. Or, you know, there's going to be a couple of big goaltenders out there. I don't know if Jaro Halak is a big enough name. He's a guy that has stolen some games.
You could platoon him with Chad Johnson pretty nicely.
You go Halak and Chad Johnson. I feel like maybe they have platoons together in the past.
Or does somebody really believe that Jonathan Bernier is a number one goalie? Which I got shat on when he was in Toronto for saying, I'm not convinced he is, because he's never exhibited the consistency that a number one goalie has to exhibit, but maybe you believe that he can at some point.
I think he's too small too. The problem is when you're a goalie his size, when you're slumping the net, there's just too many holes in the net. It's not like you're Pekka or Devin Dubnyk when you're just pucks are still going to hit you because you're a giant.
Yeah.
And to me, Brian Elliott, I mean, if there are football fans out there, Brian Elliott is the Billy Volek of goaltenders, because he's a guy who he always excels when the pressure's off. If he's behind, you know, Jake Allen, he's not supposed to be the long-term guy. He puts up amazing numbers.
Yeah.
And then suddenly this year he slumps. Chad Johnson becomes the de facto starter. Suddenly the pressure's off Elliott, and then he goes on a crazy run. It seems like he's just built to be a really good 1B who's going to step in. But every time the pressure's been on him to be the number one guy, I don't know if it's a mental thing or what, but it just seems like he wilts a little bit. So, yeah, I agree. I don't think it's going to be Elliott in the net next year. I like the idea of a Halak-Chad Johnson reunion.
Maybe?
Yeah, I mean...
Ooh, Halak?
But, I mean, because Chad Johnson, he's going to cost a lot less than Ben Bishop, who's still probably going to command, what, $6 million cap hit on the open market? Maybe a bit less because he finished the season as a backup goaltender.
But don't you have to tell your fans, if you're in Calgary, like, don't you have to tell your fans, like, we saw this was our Achilles heel. This, you know, we got a good young team here. We got some really dynamic young players. We got a great back end, you know, really good mobile defense. You know, this is our Achilles heel. This is where we need to improve, and we're going to do it by getting Jaroslav Halak.
Ben Bishop is your best case scenario.
Your plan A.
That's your plan A.
Yeah.
I don't know if somehow they can finagle Marc-Andre Fleury. Probably not, but that would be another plan A.
Mm-hmm.
But I think your plan B, excuse me, if I'm doing PR for the Flames and I bring in Jaro Halak, I say, this guy has stolen games in the past. He has stolen playoff series, albeit about a decade ago right now. He was amazing at the World Cup of Hockey for stretches.
Mm-hmm.
He can do this. We are a growing team with some nice offensive weapons, some nice mobile defensemen. We're a good possession team, getting better. All we need is somebody who can hold us in a couple of games when we're not there.
And Halak graded out as a very good goalie this year, like according to these sort of advanced numbers. And he's also a low-risk investment. I think he's got 1 year left on his deal. So maybe after that year, you got a guy like John Gillies in the minors who's ready to come in and take a shot at being the main guy. It's something to think about if you're the Flames. And it's interesting, though, like you said, Ken, you want to send a message to your fans, because the cautionary tale to me this year, the Dallas Stars, their goaltending was terrible last year, and the message they sent was, no, we're good. We're going
to
try it again.
Every time I talked to Jim Nill about it, it was like, no, we're sticking with what we have, and we think it's good enough. Well, it clearly was not.
That's right. It
clearly was not.
So, but I do think Marc-Andre Fleury, like you said, Ryan, that's a name to watch, because he's a guy who, you know, Pittsburgh looks brilliant for keeping him, obviously with Matt Murray hurt this year, but somebody's going to have to go in that situation. And Fleury, he still has the ability to control his own destiny a little bit, because he's got that no movement clause. And if the trade can be worked out, I do think the Penguins, you know, they care about him and they know that Murray's their long-term starter. I do think they care enough that they would accommodate him if a deal was on the table before the expansion draft. So you never know. I would watch a team like Calgary for Fleury.
I just want to let people know that Ryan Kennedy is rocking the Detroit CompuWare t-shirt today.
Yeah, it was my spot. Souvenir.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I was at the Team USA World Juniors Summer Tournament featuring the U.S., Canada, Sweden, and Finland. And right. I was at the new USA Hockey Arena, in which was used to be home of the Plymouth Whalers.
Exactly.
And it was home of Detroit CompuWare. And I was like, I want a nerdy souvenir.
That's pretty cool.
Detroit CompuWare.
There's nothing nerdy about that. That's you're rocking a nice
shirt. It's pretty
there.
Sweet.
Well, I appreciate that.
It's pretty sweet.
When I was a kid, I thought Plymouth was Plymouth.
Interesting.
Plymouth. I'd see a Plymouth Voyager on the highway and say, it's Plymouth!
I always thought it was Arkansas instead of Arkansas.
It's our Kansas, damn it.
It's our Kansas.
Switching back over to the Eastern Conference, what's going on with the Washington Capitals? Is this a story of the same old choke situation, or are the Leafs playing well enough that they deserve the credit, or what's going on in your minds?
The Washington Capitals are choking dogs. They're choking dogs. Like, seriously?
Why dogs, by the way?
Seriously?
Dogs
I don't know. Dave Schultz wrote that like 10 years ago, and we've been talking about it ever since. He said the Ottawa Senators have one game to prove they're not a bunch of choking dogs, and ever since then I've all used
because dogs don't... Dogs. I feel like dogs are among the animals that probably choke the least.
Yeah, try and feed them a chicken bone. See what happens.
Well, other than chicken bones.
Anyways, they're choking dogs. They're choking dogs. Like, are you kidding me? You've got a 2-3-1 lead. You've just scored to put yourself up 3-1 in the second period. A minute later, you get a full 5-on-3 for 2 minutes, and that's what you do? You gag it up like that? As my dad would have said, deserve to be shot with a bucket of your own shit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I think specifically, you have to look at their defense right now. And apparently Carl Alsner also going to miss game 4. He missed game 3. That's brutal, because they are missing him in the worst way.
Yep.
Kevin Shattenkirk had a game from hell in game 3. He was on the ice for the 3-2 goal, the 3-3 goal. Then he took a penalty for good measure.
Yeah.
Just not what you were expecting from the big quote-unquote trade deadline acquisition. I think Brooks Orpik is obviously being targeted physically. I'm not sure if it's because of the Roman Polak injury or just the Leafs acknowledge that he is a weak link on that team, and then if they can break him down further, that will spur an opportunity. I found this very interesting. I was at the game, and you get your stats after each period. After the first period, Dmitry Orlov was the top minute man on the Washington Capitals blue line.
Yeah.
That was very surprising to me.
Yeah.
And I think that's a problem because, like, Toronto's young guys, they're pretty fearless. Even though they're not necessarily physical, like, William Nylander was winning almost all his puck battles. And, like, that should not happen. He's a guy that's supposed to be dangerous once he has the puck.
Mm-hmm.
He's not supposed to be dangerous in the acquisition of the puck. But he was getting those. Matthews does it with his reach. Hyman does it with his speed and his body positioning. Hyman's the most physical of that tandem. But they were dominant when it came to possession. Right now, they're the best possession line in the entire NHL
playoffs. That's right.
You got to figure out how to stop them. Because eventually, the matchups actually shift depth-wise to Toronto. If you can counteract the Ovechkin line or the Backstrom line and the Kuznetsov line with the Kadri line, the Bozak line, that leaves the Matthews line. And you got to figure out, can Lars Eller shut them down? Can Jay Beagle shut them down? If the answer is no, then you're kind of stuck.
Well, to me, I think Barry Trotz is, I mean, it worked in the regular season. They got four lines that can score. They've got four good lines. It worked in the regular season, but you're not going to win games when Alex Ovechkin is getting 15 minutes of ice time and Nicholas Backstrom is getting 17 minutes of ice time. Those guys have to be on the ice more. I know there were penalties last night, and Ovi doesn't kill penalties, but you got it. He's gotten killed in the matchups so far. He hasn't had the people out that he's wanted to have out, and even on the road, it's not an excuse. Like, you got to get your you got to go with your horses. And to me, like, the knock on the Washington Capitals all the time has been that their best players don't show up in the playoffs. Well, they're showing up.
Oh, yeah.
They're good.
Yeah,
like, Justin Williams has been good. Ovi's got two goals. Backstrom's been a monster.
Yep, because
that's
awesome.
And Braden Holtby. And the thing that we thought was going to be good was goaltending and defense. You know, who would have thought that Toronto was going to lose a bunch of guys, and the more guys they lose, the better they get.
Yeah, right.
And that they were going to outplay Washington's defense corps.
Yeah.
Like Shattenkirk and Orpik on that Nylander tying goal, that was like textbook screw-uppery.
Yes.
Like, holy cow, they were both stuck behind the net, and Nylander standing out there, you know, taking measurements of where he's going to shoot from, for Christ's sakes.
I do think the defense corps, and I didn't see it coming, because I thought what was different about Washington this year was the defense corps was stronger, but that's been the weakness. And that's why I kind of want to give credit to the Leafs. I don't think it's just a choke job. I think the Leafs are actually showing themselves to be a bad matchup for Washington, because there's just no answer for the speed. I do think that's why, the reason why Dmitry Orlov had to lead Washington in minutes, because he's probably their best skating defenseman. But I think those Leaf forwards, especially when they can do it on so many different lines, they're just giving the Caps fits. And you saw, I like Washington's strategy at the beginning of Game 3 when they got physical, because they know the Leafs were already depleted. They banged Gardner, Riley, and they used their size advantage on the forecheck. But as the game progressed, it's the young legs, and all these games are going to overtime. They're grinds, and the young legs, William Nylander is still flying around like a water bug in overtime, the third period, and you're seeing the Brooks Orpiks of the world, who have a lot of mileage on them, just starting to get exhausted. And I think Kadri's been a big reason for that as well. So I do think Washington, yes, they're showing signs of squandering this, but I also think we have to acknowledge that the Leafs are a good team. They're not just a cute little story. They're a pretty good team. They're not perfect.
They're really good. And what they're doing right now is they're proving at every time they get tested, they're proving that they're better than everyone thought they were. They're better. Their coach is better than everyone thought he was. Their players are they are a better team than everyone thought they were. They're not this good, though. This is, to me, I disagree with you. I think this is a choke job. And to me, like, Jay Beagle and Daniel Winnick have to stop getting 13 minutes of ice time a game. They have to go down to 8, and those other 4 and 5 minutes have to go to your big body guys, your guys that can do it, and you win or lose with those guys. Like, to me,
And Backstrom's been phenomenal.
I am just flabbergasted at the way Washington has approached this series. It's almost like they're they want to show too much respect or I don't know what it is, but come on, we're the Washington Capitals. We had 100 and whatever points. Like, let's go out and play the game the way it's supposed to be played. I'm getting pissed off at this team, by the way. I'm never picking them ever again to ever win anything, and I said that before, and now I'm doing it for sure.
Yeah.
Like, my son's a Washington Capitals fan. He came and watched the game at his buddy's house. He came in last night, and he was so pissed off. And I said, you should be pissed off at this team. You should be angry. He's like, the worst chokers ever.
Now, do you think, it's two losses. Do you guys think, if you had to pick the series for going forward, would you still pick the Caps to win the series? Do you think they're going to pull it off, or are you?
I still think they'll pull it off. I still think they'll pull it off because they've beaten the Leafs before this season. The strategy is pretty clear that you take away time and space, you play them physical, and you use your size and your talent and your experience to win. I thought the turning point in the game last night was when Kadri took a couple of runs at Orpik, and then the crowd gets into it, and Matthews scores. And all of a sudden, the Caps are like, oh, they can punch us back. Huh.
Yeah, we weren't expecting that.
Yeah.
This is supposed to
but
be
it's like, no, don't worry about it. Get into that battle. Because you're bigger than them. You know?
You are. You're bigger, you're stronger, you're more experienced.
You're supposed to push them around. Yeah. It's okay. It doesn't matter how you win. Just win.
I think Washington can win, and when I say I think, I say it with a question mark. I think they will still win the series, and only because they're, I think they need to make a few tweaks and adjustments, and I'm sure Barry Trotz is listening to this and will do what I said, so that's going to happen.
Clearly.
And secondly, I think we have to remember, too, that this is still a very young Leafs team, and they've been prone to collapsing in games. Mm-hmm. And a little bit down the stretch.
And when they have something to lose.
A little bit down the stretch,
suddenly they have something to lose.
Yeah, I mean, right now, like...
Right now it's fun.
Yeah, up until this point, it's all been like, we're the plucky little underdogs.
Yeah.
Watch us come out and play like this, and this is so much fun.
Yeah.
They win now.
Oh, my God, we can win this.
Now the pressure's starting to go on them.
Yeah.
And they have not proven this year that they can handle that mantle of pressure. Maybe they can. Maybe they'll do it in this series and they'll slay that dragon. But I think they still got some lessons to learn.
Yeah, and I think the key is going to be on the defense corps, and we saw it in Game 3, where you have some players that are a little cavalier, and sometimes it works out for them.
Yeah.
But they buttoned it down in Game 3. Guys like Jake Gardner, Nikita Zaitsev, Martin Marincin, when there was the chance to make a safe play versus maybe a more risky play, they went with the safe play.
Right.
And they haven't always been like that. And again, sometimes that's okay. Sometimes it, you know, reaps benefits. But in the playoffs, if you're a defenseman and you're on an underdog team, don't give the big guy life. And last night they were pretty good about that, where they would stop short and be like, yeah, maybe I won't pinch.
Especially
maybe
Gardner. I'll pull back. Gardner was phenomenal.
Gardner was phenomenal. Yeah. I think they're learning lessons. They gotta keep that. They have to realize, no, you're the underdog, you can't screw up.
Right.
No screwing up.
And I don't even know what to make of puck luck, because like I always thought it was just a bunch of bullshit before and
hooey.
Yeah, hooey. You know, so I don't even know what to make of it, but the Leafs have had a lot of it. They've had a ton of it. Every goal last night was like it went through a pinball machine before it went in the net. You know, and then, you know, the Morgan Riley goal, the power play goal, he dips it in. And so they've had a lot. They seem to have had quite a bit of puck luck. And so I don't know what to make of that. I don't know if that all evens out. Maybe, you know, Nerdy McNerdy can tell me here that whether or not this
what
all
do you mean? Dumb's not here.
Yeah, you're pretty much a nerd, too. Like, maybe you can tell me that that's going to all even out by the
end
of
the series. Well, if you calculate
the
velocity.
To me, I mean, I'm going to use the old Pat Burns quote. Game 4 is the most important game of the series, and I think the winner of Game 4 will win the series. If the Leafs win it at home again, up 3-1, I think they can win one more game after that. But if the Caps win Game 4, and I do think they will win Game 4, then it's 2-2. Then you got 2 of 3 at the Verizon Center. Yeah. So, to me, winner of Game 4, I think that's the series right there, and we'll see. We have time for a couple reader questions. I guess we'll start with one while we're on the topic of the Leafs. Maple Mecca asks, why isn't Kadri captain?
Because it's a maturity issue. He's just not mature enough to be the captain of this team. And I don't know if he'll ever be mature enough to be the captain of this team. He takes really bad penalties sometimes. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, off ice, you hear things sometimes, you know. It took the Leafs 6 years to figure out what they had in this guy. You know, like it took them a long time to figure out what they had in this guy. They didn't even know if he was going to be, you know, good enough to be a regular contributor in the league for a long time. And now they know what they have. And I actually think that would be a guy, like you give the captaincy to Austin Matthews, I don't think it's going to change his game. You give the captaincy to Nazem Kadri, I think it would wear on him. I don't think Nazem Kadri as a captain of this team would be a very good choice.
It's like to me giving the captaincy to Brad Marchand. You know, they figured out what Kadri is, and he's a great combination of scorer and agitator.
Yeah.
But playing close to the edge, you are going to take penalties. You're going to do those things that captains don't do. And Kadri can be the dark knight of the Leafs. He's got a role, and it does involve sometimes taking bad penalties. But you saw what he did with Orpik in Game 3. There's still a real purpose for that. Yeah. It's not a captain role.
Right.
Yeah, I think you either wait until you think Austin Matthews is ready to take it, which maybe it's even next year. I mean, we're seeing kids get it really early these days. Or maybe it's Morgan Riley. My only fear there is that fans at one point were trying to put the Dion Phaneuf horns on him, which I thought was a little unfair because he was playing very tough minutes.
Well, and he had that high ankle sprain, and those high ankle sprains, they're brutal.
Yeah.
Like, they are brutal to get through.
Yeah, but
he's looked better, too, now.
Yeah.
I think Morgan Riley has the medal to be the captain, and I think he would be a good captain. It's just a matter of, you know, I mean, we're not inside the dressing room. We don't know what the dynamics are like or what they're going to be next year and how Babcock feels about a very young captain in Matthews. But those would be my two options.
Good. Next question from Frank Kulicki. What are the chances Ralph Kruger leaves his great job in Europe to return to the NHL this season?
I don't think they're that great, to be honest with you. He's got a pretty good gig. And, I mean, if he was going to jump, last year would have been the prime time to do it, I would think. You know, after what he did in the World Cup. And he wasn't waffling last year. Like, when it was like, hey, how come you're not back in the NHL or whatever, he wasn't even saying, like, well, you know, if the right offer came along or something. He pretty much put that out right at the source. And it was like, nope, very happy with what I'm doing. Enjoy what I'm doing. I'm really invigorated. And he runs the whole show there. So I don't get the sense that there's, you know, I could be wrong, but I don't get the sense that it's going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, there were rumblings out there. Elliot Friedman said that he asked him about Vancouver. It just doesn't seem like the proper fit for me, particularly since the Canucks have a guy in Travis Green that they have already cultivated within their own system, a guy that knows a lot of the young players already. Vancouver obviously going to be a franchise in transition in the next couple of years. It just doesn't seem like a proper fit for me. So, yeah, I think, yeah, he's happy where he
is. Yeah, I don't see it happening either. I think he's, I'm sure he's going to get some calls if he hasn't already, but I don't think he's going to go. Next question is from Mattio. I like the name. How does this year's draft compare to other years? Is the top consensus pick close to Nail Yakupov in terms of raw talent? That's a loaded question. Is he saying is Nolan Patrick a bust? We'll start with Ryan.
Ryan, our draft guru.
That's right. Yeah. Yes. A loaded question. I would say a more favorable comparison would be the Ryan Nugent Hopkins draft, where if Nolan Patrick's number one, and seems right now that he has a slight edge over Nico Hischier, in Nolan Patrick, you're probably getting a very good second line center at best.
Yeah.
And if we look back at the Ryan Nugent Hopkins draft, and we look at Ryan Nugent Hopkins now, that's what he is. He's a second line center. When he gets hot, he's a very good one. When he's not, he's an okay one. But I think that's sort of the parameters in which we're looking at.
Yeah.
Somebody can always surprise. Maybe Nico Hischier turns into Jonathan Drouin. And then it becomes a matter of how highly do you think of Jonathan Drouin? How much better is he going to get? It's going to be interesting to see some of the mobile defensemen that go high up. Cale Makar, Miro Heiskanen. Based on where the NHL is headed right now, those kids are going to be very valuable, even though they're both in the 5'11 range, where we're used to the top defensemen being the big Seth Jones, Aaron Ekblad, you know, those kind of kids that are 6'3", 6'4". Eric Johnson,
Zach Ryan
being another one. Yeah, so it's an okay draft. Yeah. I think it's something that we have to put into perspective that we're probably only going to see one or two of these kids jump straight from the NHL and jump straight to the NHL. But, I mean, there's going to be gems. There always is. But I think it's important to realize that it's not a McDavid, Austin Matthews kind of year.
It's the Godfather 3 of drafts, right? You know, when you're compared to 1 and 2, it's only bad. People only call the Godfather 3 bad because they're comparing it to 1 and 2, which are generational talents of movies.
I talked to a scout, and he said, all I keep hearing is that this is a bad draft, and he said it's not. He said it's a normal draft.
Mm-hmm.
It's a normal draft.
Just like Godfather 3 was a normal movie, if it was called, like, Michael's Day with His Daughter, people wouldn't be shitting on it. Anyways, continue.
Anyways, he said it was a normal draft. He said, is somebody going to come out of this draft and score 40 goals in his rookie year? No. But that usually doesn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, it usually doesn't happen. I'll tell you what's going to happen in this draft. 10 guys in the first round are going to be players that play for a long time. 10 guys are going to be guys who have decent careers. And, you know, 8 to 10 guys are going to fizzle out in the first round. There's going to be a guy that's picked in the fifth round, none of us have ever heard of yet, that's going to be in the Hall of Fame. And there's going to be some kid that won't even be picked in this draft who's going to be a 40-goal scorer in the NHL. So, it follows a pretty familiar pattern a lot of times, right? Like, you know, okay, 1999, that's an outlier. Mm. That was a horseshit draft. That was bad. It was the Daniel Sedins and 500 guys.
Yeah.
You know? Like, 2003? Is that the draft that's the greatest one?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's an outlier. Yeah. You know, 1979, outlier. You know, but for the most part, drafts follow that kind of similar linearness. And so I don't see that this is any different. And like I said, the guy was telling me it's a normal draft. It's just, you know, we've been spoiled the last couple of years.
You're going to find your hidden gems, just like, you know, Andy Garcia was pretty good in Godfather 3. I'm just saying. I know Sofia Coppola couldn't act, but Andy Garcia was good. I'm just saying.
And Sofia Coppola, great director. So maybe one of the kids picked in this draft
is going to be
a great GM. Or a
coach.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's good thinking.
Yes.
That's good thinking.
No stretching in that metaphor.
Not at all. Not in the least.
Never.
Well, it's time to let you guys go. Hope you enjoy the rest of the first round. I want to leave you with one deep philosophical question from Harry Styles, Mr. One Direction. If you blow a 3-goal lead on the road, were you ever really in the playoffs to begin with? Thanks for listening.